Support for WPR comes from the American Society of Landscape Architects Wisconsin Chapter. Dedicated to reimagining the design of outdoor spaces for the well-being of all. Examples at wiasla.com. Money, 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 money.
Money on my mind. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kevin McKinley is off today, but we have a special guest with us who will share with you information and advice on getting out of debt, raising credit scores, buying a car online, home buying myths, and much more. Plus answers to your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us on your money at WPR.org. Lauren Lyons Cole is a certified financial planner, a financial expert, and personal finance contributor for TheStreet.com. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Fox Business, and other national media outlets. Her website is laurenlyonscole.com. Lauren lives in New York City, but she joins us from California. She also visits family in Madison and Janesville from time to time. We're very happy to welcome her to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks very much, Lauren, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Joy.
So welcome to Wisconsin via the radio. It's a lot warmer where you are now than it is here, let me tell you that.
Yeah, that's the one thought I was having is that, Wisconsin is cold.
Yeah, and especially now. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the federal government shutdown and the close to default that we came. The budget deal was reached that averted all that, at least for another couple of months or so. Without getting into all of the details, what general words of wisdom do you have for those of us who might be nervous investors these days?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of people, ever since 2008, we've sort of been in a time of nervousness when it comes to the market. And the recent debt crisis, I mean, these sorts of things can really get inside your head. And I think for most of us as investors, we need to just keep our eye on the prize. This is a long-term game. You know, if we believe in the United States economy in the long run, then we can just leave our money where it is, try not to stress out at night, and, you know, go back to focusing on our families. Turn off the news if you have to. Just get away from the stress of it and focus on the fact that 20, 30 years from now, our economy is going to be okay, you know, that our stocks will have gone up in value. And the day-to-day is really, you know, it's nerve-wracking, but at the same time, it's almost not that important.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly good advice when you're younger, but what if you're nearing retirement? Is it different advice?
Sure. I mean, if you're nearing retirement, you absolutely want to be working with a trusted financial advisor so that they can help you stay on track for your specific goals. You know, it varies from person to person because someone who is, you know, in their 50s might think that they're nearing retirement, but the reality might be that they have 15, 20 more years in the workforce. So, you know, it's the advice is different these days. Things that we considered safe in the past are not necessarily safe anymore. And in some, you know, from some experts' opinion, staying in the market is actually the safest thing to do. So it's important, you know, if you are a little bit older, to be working with someone who can help make sure that you're protecting your portfolio, but at the same time not playing it too safe.
Well, looking at your website, I see that a couple of areas that you write a lot about are debt and credit scores. What debt situations, while debt situations vary from person to person, what kind of general advice do you have for people who feel like they're in over their heads?
Yeah, I mean, I work with a lot of people. Even people who are making good money can get in over their heads with debt. And I think, you know, it's a consumer society that we live in. There's so many amazing things that we can purchase. So it's easy to, you know, end up buying some, buying things that are above and beyond what you can afford. Or maybe you just really are struggling on a month-to-month basis and trying to buy groceries. And sometimes that can add up on a credit card as well. So when I work with people who are really facing debt, first of all, the first thing I can always say is, it's not the worst I've seen, you know, except for the one person who was the worst I've seen.
Right.
But a lot of people think that their situation is so bad. And really, you know, and this kind of simplifies it, but debt is just math. And no matter what the number is, no matter what your interest rates are, you can break it down. There are online calculators. There's one I love on CNN. It's called, anyone can just Google this, it's CNN Debt Planner. And you can, you know, type in all the details of your debt, and you can actually come up with a plan. They'll show you a bunch of different scenarios of how you could pay off your debt and what one monthly payment will take, you know, and how many months, how many years it'll take to get out of debt. And I encourage people just to do that. If you can kind of remove the emotional side of it and come up with a plan, stick to the plan, and then you get, you know, you start to make progress, and then eventually you get to this place where you have paid off your debt. And I've seen so many people do it, and it is such an exciting day. So, you know, again, stay focused on the eyes on the prize, focused on the goal with when it comes to paying off debt.
What does debt do to our credit score?
Actually, in some ways, debt can help our credit score, and sometimes people fail to realize that. So, you know, someone who has student loans, credit card debt, a home mortgage, and even a car loan could potentially have a higher credit score than I do. I don't have a car loan or mortgage. So having different types of debt can actually be quite good, especially if you are paying, you know, making your monthly payments on time each month, which, interestingly, is the most important thing you can do. And so taking out a bunch of debt, you know, may or may not hurt your score, but missing a payment can hurt your score by over 100 points. So this is one of the most important things that I can tell people to do. I mean, set automatic payments for your minimum monthly payments. Never, ever, ever miss a payment. And if you do, one of the best tips I can give people, and this is another thing, you can go online and search for something called a goodwill adjustment letter. So if you've missed a payment just once, you know, say, you know, you moved and the mail went to the wrong address or just some, you know, kids were busy, somehow you missed a payment, you can actually reach out to your lender and ask them to do a goodwill adjustment, which they're not obligated to do, but most places will do that. And it's great as a financial planner when I tell clients to do this because almost always it works. And often within 90 days, your credit score will jump 100 points or more. So it's this great, I mean, it's this really easy thing to do, and it has this great payout, and people get very excited and very thankful, and I didn't even do anything.
Yeah. I don't know if I asked for a goodwill adjustment. One time, I don't know, the credit card bill was just stuck in between two papers, and I just missed it, and I never miss a payment. But I called, and I at least I was forgiven. I wasn't penalized for making it, and I don't know if that was – it might have been reported to the credit agency, though.
It may or may not have been. Usually that's on like a 30-day rolling. You know, if you caught it before the 30 days was up, then they may not have reported it.
Yes, I did. So that's good. So besides missing a payment, what else can cause our credit scores to drop?
So another good thing that a lot of people don't realize is something called credit utilization. And there's an easy rule of thumb to follow for this. So you can just look at your credit cards and the maximum amount of credit that you have available to you. So let's say that's $3,000, just to make it easy. If you have a $3,000 credit limit, the key to keeping your credit score high and strong is to only use a third or less, 30% even, of that limit. So let's say $900, $950. Keep it under $1,000, basically, if you have a $3,000 credit limit available to you. Don't charge all the way up to that $3,000 limit, because doing that is going to make you look like you're not as responsible with credit. So lenders are not going to look favorably upon, you know, other lenders in the future, like if you go to get a mortgage or something like that. So you definitely want to keep your credit utilization, the amount of credit you're using, below 30% of what's available to you.
We are talking about boosting our credit scores and dealing with debt. We'll also talk about buying a car online. We're going to talk about some home buying myths and much more. Plus, we welcome your personal finance questions for our guest personal finance expert, Lauren Lyons Cole. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Lauren is a certified financial planner, and she is stepping in today as our regular financial expert Kevin McKinley has the week off. Let's take some calls. We have Jack in Milwaukee with us first. Hello, Jack.
Hi. So I have a nice problem, and that is that my in-laws have set up a trust for our children. I think it's fairly standard. And they said that they'll match whatever we put into it. And so my understanding is we get about $13,000 a year that we can use for gifts. And we've been deciding whether or not to give that to them to put in the trust and match it, or to put it in a 529 plan. But then when we talked to our accountant, she said that the money that we would put into the trust would never go towards the annual gift exemption, but rather that would go towards like a lifetime exemption. And my father-in-law thinks I'm nuts. And so I'm just wondering, what's the rules on this?
That is a very good question. And I think what might help in this case, especially when you're working with a trust across generations, there are actually certified financial planners out there who are specifically focused on multi-generational planning. And so your accountant, if that's the accountant that you and your wife usually use, you're probably better off going to a third party who can deal with both, you know, you and your wife's parents as far as coming up with a good strategy for how to fund this. Now, when it comes to the trust, the specifics of the trust, I should have read my notes on that before you called, because I don't actually remember. There are so many specific laws when it comes to that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. Don't feel bad. It sounds like it is sort of a complicated legal question there. So certainly check with maybe a legal expert, somebody who specializes in trust. Thank you very much, Jack, for the call, and congratulations, I guess. Thanks for the call. If you have a question for our guest, Lauren Lyons-Cole, who is a financial expert, personal finance contributor for TheStreet.com, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
Baby, we will talk about purchasing a car online and get some tips on that and much more on this edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley is off this week. We are very happy to have with us Lauren Lyons-Cole, who you can see her work featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and other national media outlets. Her website is laurenlyonscole.com. Let's take some more calls for her. If you have a question, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Joanne in Eau Claire is with us. Hello, Joanne.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. My husband and I are both in our mid-50s, and I've always purchased term life insurance for him. I'm now entertaining the notion of purchasing universal life or whole life, as these forms of life insurance offer investment possibilities as opposed to term, which offers no cash surrender value whatsoever. However, both life, whole life, and universal life have a higher premium.
So first, maybe, Lauren, you can tell us, what's the diff between term life insurance and whole life insurance?
Well, so the difference between term is, as it sounds like, just covering you for a very specific number of years. Could be 5 years, 10 years, 30 years, whereas whole life insurance covers you until you pass away. And they basically, the difference is with term life insurance, it's sort of like buying car insurance, you know. There's no added benefit beyond what it specifies. Now, with the whole life insurance, you do amass this cash value that you can take out, you know, borrow from. With universal life, you can invest that. But for most people, term life is really the way to go. I almost never recommend a different insurance product unless it's part of a greater sort of tax shelter, well, which I maybe shouldn't say, but unless it's part of a greater strategy on the part of the individual or the family. So is there a specific reason that you're considering moving away from term insurance?
Well, just because it offers me an investment potential where I can invest this money. It's still life insurance, but I'm still gaining an investment, whereas term, you have no investment. It's just for 1 year, and then there's no benefit after that 1 year.
So if you pay premiums for whole life insurance, Lauren, that money is still there for you once, even if you don't die?
Well, part of it. Mm-hmm. So the, you know, if you think about it, the term and the whole life, part of those premiums is going to the actual insurance. So you're going to lose part of that premium. Now, the extra part of the premium that you pay does, that's what starts to accumulate as cash value. But unless you've tapped out every other option you have for investing, so, you know, maxing out both of your 401ks, you can even do you can do some type of IRA in addition to that if you have any kids for college. I mean, basically, I would say put your money into every other investment account first before you consider a whole life product. One exception to that would be parents of special needs children. A lot of times a whole life product does make sense for them because they need to take care of their child, you know, after they've they're no longer alive. But for most of us, we just need term life insurance either until our kids graduate from college or until our retirement benefits kick in. So if you guys are kind of near retirement, you might be able to get away with like 10, 15 years more of term insurance, and then the retirement kicks in, and you won't actually need that. I'm talking generally without looking at your specific situation.
Mm-hmm. Joanne, thanks for the call. Stefan in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just went through bankruptcy, and I'm looking to rebuild my credit, and I'm wondering if you might have any suggestions.
Yeah, good for you for rebuilding your credit. You know, and a lot of times right now in the environment that we're in, you can actually rebuild it quicker than you would have been able to 10 years ago. So I would definitely recommend starting off small and, you know, taking out a credit card if you can, a secured credit card if that's what your bank will give you, and just making sure that you never miss a payment, being very diligent in all of your debt, you know, any new debt that you're taking on. And, you know, of course, just making sure that you're being strategic and intentional in any sort of debt that you are taking on. And, you know, these days they're saying like 18 months to 2 years from now, you can have credit back to a place where you would be able to buy a new home or take out whatever sort of loans you might need. So it's really not as bad as it used to be.
Good luck, Stefan. Matt in Janesville emails, recently while shopping for a car, a salesman told me that I could use a prepaid credit card in order to help build my credit. Is this true? If so, how does that work?
So I think what he was talking about is this secured credit card, which I just actually mentioned. And the best way to get a secured credit card is just to go to your bank, which, you know, you probably already have a relationship with some bank with through your checking account at the very least. So you can tell them that you're trying to build credit. This works well for anyone who's had trouble with credit in the past or for young people as well. And a secured credit card basically just means that you have to put the money up front. So you put $500 on a credit card. It's almost like it is like a prepaid card. You can use it to, you know, pay for gas, pay for groceries, and as you spend down the card, then you just put a few hundred dollars more on it. Over time, after you've done that for a while, your credit will build, and then eventually you'll be able to qualify for a full-blown credit card as well as auto loans.
Thanks, Matt. Well, speaking of cars, we'll get some tips on this buying cars in just a moment, and other answers to your personal finance questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Lauren Lyons Cole is with us today for this edition of On Your Money. Kevin McKinley has the week off. You recently did some reporting on how more people are buying cars online instead of going to the dealership. How much money can we save by buying online?
Yeah, I mean, this is such an interesting topic to me because I have the memory of going to dealerships with my parents, and I live in New York City, so I don't actually have a car. But whenever I do buy a car in the future, it's been really interesting to learn about people shopping online for cars. And the best part about this for consumers is that it's actually decreasing the variability in prices that we're paying. So we're seeing that fewer people are overpaying. But at the same time, fewer people are, you know, those really strong, good negotiators who are able to go into the dealership and get just a killer deal. There's less of that as well. So we're all kind of getting closer to paying the same price. So buying cars online is almost, it's like regulating the prices of cars. And I think that's because we spend so much time researching cars online. There was a study that showed that we spend 18 hours online researching what kind of car we're going to buy before we even go into the dealer to do the test drive or whatever. So I think we're just taking it one step further, and we're able to see the prices and compare between websites, and even dealers have their own websites. So there's just so much information out there that's allowing us as consumers to really get a better deal on cars.
Well, yeah, I can't stand that haggling stuff, but then you don't want to get ripped off either. You don't want to pay, you know, top dollar when you know everybody else is, you know, not paying top dollar. So,
right.
So when you, how does that also work if you want to trade in? Or, I mean, you just shop for cars. You say, here's the car I want. Tell the dealership that, and then you still want to drive it though, don't you?
Sure. And this is one of my favorite things. You know, you can do the test drive, but whenever you do the test drive, you've got the salesperson in the car with you usually, and they're telling you all the great things about the car, and it's sort of distracting. You can't really test it out as much as you'd like to. So I like to recommend for people to go rent the car if it's available, you know, at your local Enterprise or whatever. Check out the car first. Take it for the weekend. Even take it for a week. I mean, it's money well spent because it allows you to see if your kids' hockey equipment or whatever fits into the trunk. You can see if there's blind spots in the car that you didn't realize. So actually renting the car is much better than a test drive. You can actually see if it fits into your life. And you can still go down to the dealer if you want to, but you could actually avoid that completely if you prefer.
Yeah, and when you are, the shopping that's going on online, are people doing this from, I don't know, a Car Soup, or are they doing it from the dealership's website?
There's so many options out there. One of the favorites, I've heard this from a lot of different people, and I really like this site as well. It's called Edmunds.com. And I like this site because they have a lot of resources and tools. There's calculators, articles, you know. So for someone who's never bought a car online before, they can really help walk you through the process. It's super user-friendly. So that's a really good one. Another one that I like, which is kind of a newer site, is called AutoTempest. .com. And Auto Tempest, it's sort of like Kayak for all the online car buying sites. So if you're looking for a very specific thing, like you want a Jeep Wrangler from 2005, you can go to Auto Tempest and search within a certain radius of your home, and they will actually pull the results from many different sites. So even eBay or Craigslist, but also CarMax, you know, more standard places that you might have heard of. So Auto Tempest is a cool site just to compile lots of different information. You can compare it really easily. A lot of dealers do have their own websites, so that's an option as well. If you know, you know, someone that you like, or a local dealer that you'd like to work with, you could look online for that.
We will, by the way, put these websites that Lauren is sharing during this edition of On Your Money on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, so you can check them out. We also have the CNN Debt Planner website already up there, so you can check it out. Let's go to Nick in Madison next. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Joy.
Good morning. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, so I'm in my younger 20s. I've got a good job out of college. I've got about $9,000 in savings, but the thing is that I travel pretty frequently, and I pay for my own expenses and then get reimbursed at the end of the month. So I'm carrying a little higher, you know, each month credit card debt. And I'm curious about advice you might have for getting a loan, for getting a new or slightly used automobile.
Oh, okay. Yeah, great question. So I don't know if you've recently pulled your credit score or not, but you can do it. And here's another website to throw up on the Facebook page. CreditKarma.com is my one of my favorite personal finance sites in general, because you can check, it's totally free. You can check your actual credit score. It's your TransUnion credit score, you know, every day. Well, maybe not every day, but once a week or something, like as often as you'd like to. So if you're on the market for a new car, and if your credit score is a little bit lower than you'd like it to be, you can log into Credit Karma, find out where it's at. They actually give you tips for how to raise it. But a big thing based on what you're saying that I would recommend doing is consider taking out another credit card. And the reason for that would be, first of all, it might simplify your reimbursement situation if you haven't done this already. You know, have one credit card for personal expenses and one for your reimbursement expenses. But it'll also make the total, you know, credit balance that you have available to you, it'll make that number higher, which will then make your credit utilization percentage smaller. And that can have a huge impact on your credit score.
Okay, Nick?
That makes sense.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. I'm Joy Cardine talking with certified financial planner Lauren Lyons Cole. And you can, too, if you have a money matter or a personal finance question that you would like to run by her. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's take another call from Adam in Dubuque. Hello, Adam.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead with your question, Adam.
Well, I've been listening, and I'm a firm believer in trying to live life without debt. And in doing so, I don't really care about what my credit score is. Mm. I guess my question is, I've been trying to do this thing by Dave Ramsey. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head for some reason. But basically, it has to do with not doing car loans or credit cards or anything like that, and it's proven to be beneficial. I mean, I don't drive a brand new shiny car or anything, but it works. And my question is that not an option in today's day and age? I mean, I heard you make a statement about trust in the government and believing in the economy, and it's kind of like, I believe in, if I'm going to investing in precious metals compared to investing in like the stock market, because whenever inflation happens, those keep a pretty constant value and go up.
Right. And Adam, you're saying that when you buy a car, you pay cash, or when you buy a house, you pay cash. I don't take out a loan.
Credit card at all.
Well, you don't take out loans?
No.
Yeah. All right. So is that an option in this day and age, Lauren?
Yeah. I mean, I know a handful of people, who also are living without any sort of debt. But the thing is, you know, I don't know your specific situation, but for a lot of people in America, we just don't have enough money to live 100% debt-free. And I'm thinking more along the lines of taking out a mortgage. You know, a car loan, it's better to buy a car with cash. I completely agree. But if your car breaks down, if your 12-year-old car breaks down and you don't have $8,000 or $12,000 or $15,000 to go buy a new used car, you might have to go to the dealer and take out a car loan. So for a lot of people in America, it's not feasible to live that way. But if you're able to do that, I think that's fantastic and you know, something to aspire to. But when it comes to money, we also have to be somewhat realistic with what people are working with.
And what's your philosophy? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to add about the precious metals.
Right.
You know, the stock market does increase at a higher rate of inflation as well, historically speaking. So hopefully that will continue to be true.
But do you have a philosophy when it comes to investing in gold or silver? We hear these ads still all the time. Is that a part of our portfolio if we choose?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. The thing is that we cannot predict future returns of any sort of investment. And although, you know, gold has been blowing up lately, and so people are feeling pretty great about gold, but there have also been times where gold has not been great. And so, you know, I mean, it's probably a good bet in the long run, but I don't know. And what I do know is that the stock market historically has increased, and that is the best, you know, it still is the best way that we can plan on beating inflation in the long run. So that's, you know, that tends to be where I keep my money.
Tony in Middleton is with us. Hello, Tony.
Hi. Let's see. My question is associated with investments, probably focused a little bit on bonds, but maybe alternatives. We have a couple hundred thousand dollars we're interested in moving around at this point in time, currently in money market. And it's only been a money market for a short period of time, and it is an IRA. And with the uncertainty as far as quantitative easing and the Fed's focus potentially in the future as far as tapering and bonds being a little bit uncertain, I'm wondering if short, mid, or long-range or long-term bonds are appropriate at this point in time, or is there something better than that?
Great question. And, you know, this sort of goes back to what we were discussing at the beginning of the call. And I know that with the government, there's so much just anxiety right now around investing, and especially if you're trying to, you know, pick safe investments, it can be kind of scary. What is safe these days? But I really have to go back to, you need to sit down with a trusted advisor who knows your specific situation, who can help you come up with long-term goals, because really we don't want to be investing for the next 6 months or even a year, because the amount of fees that we're paying in transactions, or you know, just moving things around and speculating, studies have shown that we end up losing money for most of us, most general investors, in the long run by doing that. So it's so much better to sit down with someone and have a long-term focus, even if that, by long-term, that's 5-10 years. It doesn't have to be 30-40 years, but trading in the interim is just something I don't recommend for most people.
Thanks very much, Tony, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with certified financial planner Lauren Lyons Cole. This is On Your Money, and if you have a personal finance question, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, I don't know about you, but I am planning my winter vacation right now. It's getting cold, and I know I'm going to want to go somewhere warm this winter. We'll get some tips on saving money on our vacations with our guest, Lauren Lyons Cole, a certified financial planner, personal finance contributor for thestreet.com. She'll also answer your personal finance questions of any kind at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. So, Lauren, is this a good time to be planning the winter vacation?
Yeah, actually, if you can't quite wait until January or February, you could actually get some great last-minute deals right now. Fall is a really pretty good time to travel. I know it can be hard with holidays, but you can. I mean, it's also a great time to be planning for your winter vacation if you are looking out. And I would say do it sooner rather than later, because the prices do, as you get closer to the date of departure, will continue to increase.
Well, let's talk about some of the, where might we want to consider going if we want to save a few bucks this fall?
Yeah, well, this fall, anyone who might have the Galapagos Islands on their list of places that they'd love to go before they die, Galapagos in the fall, you can really actually find some good deals. So, and this is, I think of this one specifically because it's like my dad's dream destination. It was his birthday yesterday.
Oh.
Not that I bought him a ticket to the Galapagos.
It's on my list, too. I'm excited to hear this.
Yeah, so for whatever reason, you know, I mean, the Galapagos is sort of like Hawaii, which is another good place to go this time of year, where the weather's pretty great year-round. There's really not a bad time to go. But the water is a little bit colder in October, November. And so as a result, prices drop. And, you know, tourism is a little bit less this time of year. So I was actually able to go a few years ago. I went to the Galapagos, and my round-trip airfare from New York City, no joke, was $680.
Wow.
Which is real. I mean, for international travel, that's very low. And, of course, that's something you set a savings goal and work towards it over time. But if you want to go to the Galapagos or Hawaii, for that matter, the fall is really the time to go. And the wildlife is very active this time of year. So it's a great option.
Well, I think I'll take a fall vacation and a winter vacation.
I know.
That's good. I have actually a special yoga retreat coming up this winter. That's a very out-of-the-ordinary vacation. I normally don't do that, but that's in the planning stages right now in Belize. How's that?
Oh, that'll be beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's take some more calls. Susan in Monona. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm so glad to have your guest on today. I have a question about financing a home purchase, and I have poor credit, but I have over $500,000 in assets in land.
Oh.
So far, I have not been able to get conventional financing or financing a credit union because of my credit. They don't care, it seems, what I have in assets, they don't do asset-based lending.
Yeah, so
how can I do this, and how can I do this really quickly?
Quickly, okay. So, if it's something where there is urgency, which sounds like it could be a longer conversation, but there may be some things that you can do really quickly to repair some of your credit. I mean, some, bigger things take longer to fall off your credit score, your credit report. But if you do, you could go and pull your credit report. And if there are any sort of things like missed payments in the past, it blows my mind how many people have these on their credit reports. And it literally impacts your score by over 100 points. So you could, comb through your credit report and see if there are any kind of high value, easy sort of things, because the goodwill adjustment literally will improve your credit score within 90 days. Oftentimes it's within 30 days. So if that's one, that might be one route that you could go. I don't know your whole financial situation, but you could sell some of the land potentially and generate a bigger down payment, which could be an option, or just wait. I mean, reevaluate your timeline if possible.
Yeah, I'm hoping to purchase a house in the next week or two.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's the problem. That's the rub.
Yeah, well, you maybe if you've got family who knows about the land, there may be some different routes you could take. If there's anyone who might, like a personal relationship, you can draw up legal documents. There's a lot. Banks are not the only way to get money that you need.
Good luck, Susan. Thanks for the call. Terry in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, Terry.
Hi, good morning. I'm a bit puzzled about the credit system in this country. Not long ago, one of my sons was refinancing, and he went and purchased his credit scores and then went to the loan institution where he was refinancing, and we discovered at that time that the ability to get your credit score in a number can be done by two or three or four different institutions, and each one of them may come up with a different final number. And that number, even one single digit, can make the difference between 0.5% or 1% interest in the loan that you get. And I'm wondering, is there some governmental institution or someone that regulates who the banks and savings and loans choose to pick their final score? I mean, they could be making millions just by ordering all three numbers or four numbers, picking the lowest one that gives them the highest rate of interest, and then the consumer suffers.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought this up, actually. This is a really, really important point that a lot of people don't understand, and that is that there are three different credit agencies that do calculate our credit scores. They all come up with different numbers. They even have different scales that they use. And, and the thing that really puzzles me is no one publishes the actual, exact formula that these agencies are using to help us understand where our credit scores are coming from. So the best we can do is kind of piece things together and guess, but we do a pretty good job with that. But it is really important, the best thing you can do as a consumer, if you are going to do a refinancing or take out a large loan like a mortgage, the best thing you can do is pull your credit report from all three agencies well before you go in. Give yourself 6 months, 3 months at least, and you can go to annualcreditreport.com. That is the federal method for pulling your credit report. You can do it from each agency once a year. So you get three credit reports once a year from annualcreditreport.com. The crazy thing is each credit report could have different information, and there may be incorrect information on one. There could be missed payments reported on one and not on the other. So you really need to pull all three and make sure that they're all matching and that they all have correct information. You want to do that way in advance. And that way, when you go to the bank, you're less likely to be surprised when they pull, a credit score from some other agency that you if you're focused on Equifax and they're pulling something from TransUnion, you want to go in really well-armed and prepared as the consumer.
Terry, good luck to you. Thanks very much. I'm Joy Cardine with Lauren Lyons Cole. She is a certified financial planner. She is the personal finance contributor for thestreet.com. Her website is laurenlyonscole.com. She is in today for this edition of On Your Money. If you have a question for her, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Emily in Pleasant Prairie emails, "I'm about to turn 30. Happy birthday almost, Emily. And I feel I need to start planning and saving for retirement, but I have no idea where to start. How does one go about finding a trusted, independent financial advisor?"
Great question. And I love, you know, so many clients or so many friends of mine, when they turn 30, it's like that's the magic age mm-hmm. for getting your finances in order. So I think it's fantastic. And, you know, if you haven't already done it beforehand, this is the time to do it. So, but what I would recommend, you know, if you're just starting to save for retirement, first and foremost, you got to look at any sort of employer plans that you have. So if there's a 401k at work, and if that if your employer is matching any contributions to your 401k, you want to start there. Above and beyond that, when we're talking about someone who's young, like 30, 35, young and younger than that, there's a wonderful, wonderful retirement account called the Roth IRA, which I'm sure some of the older listeners will know all about and probably are trying to tell their children or their grandchildren that they need one. But it's a great retirement account where we can actually set aside money today on an after-tax basis. So it's just sort of like the same money you would use to spend on, you know, buying new clothes. You could put that money towards retirement instead. And then fast forward, you know, 30, 40 years when you're ready to retire, and if you've invested that money and it's grown, you know, that it could be a $5,000 contribution that turns into $16,000. And when we go to remove that money in retirement, we do not have to pay taxes. So that is a huge amount of, you know, talking like $11,000 growth over time from a $5,000 contribution that the government lets us take out tax-free. So as young people, that is a great thing that we can really focus on doing today, you know, above and beyond any 401k matching plans. And then as far as choosing an advisor to help you with that, now I see so many people, young people, who really don't have that much money yet, and they think that they need to go to an advisor. But when you still have, you know, not that much in your retirement assets, you can actually benefit from really basic investing help. And me personally, I like Vanguard because they have this great risk tolerance questionnaire online, super easy to use, and they'll spit out recommendations for, you know, put 30% of your money into this index fund and 70% into this index fund, and it doesn't cost anything to use their advice, and it's honestly, it's just as good as most certified financial planners are going to give young people. So, you know, that would be my personal recommendation. Another thing that's very popular are target date mutual funds. So if you know you're going to retire in 2055, you can actually just pick one single mutual fund that's focused on that, and you don't have to think about it. So that's a good option for young people as well.
Good luck, Emily. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the myths that you reported on when it comes to buying a home on your website. Apparently, our credit score is not the most important factor when applying for a mortgage. How big a role does our credit score play, and what are other factors out there?
Well, you know, and I believe it was Susan who had this question, actually. So your credit score, a lot of people think that it's the most important factor when applying for a mortgage, and it is important. But you have to keep in mind that the bank is actually going to be taking into consideration a bunch of other factors as well, such as, you know, how much cash you have for a down payment, what your monthly income is, if you're in a, you know, pretty reliable job versus if you're self-employed. So they're going to look at a bunch of different things when it comes to whether or not you're going to get approved. Having a good credit score, you know, may not be enough, basically. But also having a bad credit score may not keep you from purchasing a home, depending on how low it is. What the credit score does govern is what your interest rate will be. So it's super important that if you have the time and the ability that you focus on raising your credit score before you go in to get the mortgage, just so that you can save money on the interest rate in the long run. But, it, you know, it's not the only thing that the bank is going to take into consideration.
This week, the Wisconsin Realtors Association said that 6,000 homes were sold in the state last month, and that's up from a year ago. And it was the 27th straight month that home sales have risen in Wisconsin. The median sale price rose as well. So the numbers are up nationally as well. If you're looking into buying a home, Lauren, what do you think? Should we do it now or do we wait?
A great question. And this is sort of goes along with the investing. You know, people, there's so much noise in the media about homes and the market, all these things. But the most important thing I can tell a consumer is there is no right time to buy a home. It is only right when you are ready, when you have the money in the bank, you know, when your credit score is in the right place, when it's time for you. I mean, because if you're somewhere and you think, oh gosh, I got to buy a home, everyone's saying now is the time, prices are going up. But if you're going to move in 2 years, it's possible that you're going to lose money because of closing costs and all the things that go into the initial purchase. So actually, here's another website for you guys. But the New York Times has a fantastic rent versus buy calculator. So for any first-time home buyers out there, or anyone who's renting at the moment who thinks they might want to purchase a home, you can use this calculator to find out if it is, in fact, a good financial decision. And it might be a great time for people to buy this. It might be a good time to take advantage of the low interest rates, but we'll probably have low interest rates for at least a little bit longer, so don't go rushing. Oh, although I should add, winter is a pretty good time to buy. So if you've been on the market, you might want to increase your search right about now.
Oh, because there's people might lower the price a little bit or something?
Well, people who a lot of homeowners will not list during the holiday season because they think that, people are distracted. They're not out home shopping. Those that are listing probably need to sell. So you might have more of negotiating power if you're ready to buy this time of year.
Carl in New Berlin emails, I paid off my mortgage as soon as I could, and I found great peace of mind because of it. I know that Kevin McKinley wants us to keep a mortgage. How does the guest feel about this? Our regular financial planner guest says because of low interest rates, having a 30-year mortgage and paying it off as slowly as possible makes some financial sense. You can use that extra money in other places. But what do you think, Lauren?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Kevin. I think that mathematically, it makes a lot, especially with interest rates as low as they are. And this applies to student loans, I should say, as well. If you have an interest rate that's lower than what you could be earning through investing, then just, yeah, he's absolutely right. Keep the mortgage. But what I have learned from working with individuals, across the country is that debt is so emotional that sometimes the peace of mind is worth a lot more than whatever small amount you're saving by, you know, putting your money elsewhere instead of all into your mortgage. So, I can get behind that, and I can support someone who feels better paying off their mortgage just as long as they're not, you know, missing out on other goals as a result.
Well, Lauren, that does it for this hour. Are you going to be visiting Wisconsin anytime soon to see your family?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, hopefully so. I've got lots of family in Madison and also in Janesville.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Lauren Lyons-Cole is a certified financial planner, personal finance contributor for TheStreet.com. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Fox Business, and other national media outlets. You can read more about her on her website, laurenlyonscole.com. Kevin McKinley will be back next week, and we will have his promised segment on saving and spending in retirement. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.